Well, Shabbat Shalom, everybody. Let me just begin by saying that I have a confession to make to you. I love cheesy feel-good movies. I really do. I love them. It doesn't matter how bad the acting. Rain and I always joke that I'm the one in our marriage to tear up during the, like, really bad parts, you know? It's funny. What always seems to make me cry is this theme of reconciliation that happens. Again, like Hallmark special, you know, it gets me. Like a struggling father steps up to the plate and comes home and reconciles with his family. You know, I'm crying. Like, that's it. A woman adopts a child whose parents had died and they become a family. I'm like a blubbering, you know. It's funny. That's why I love the Joseph story, because it's a story about reconciliation. And, you know, when he reveals himself to his brothers, I cry just about every time. Every time I read it, when I hear it out loud, and I, even during the Disney version of the movie, Joseph, I cried. I like to think that it's not just that I'm soft, but that reconciliation is so close to God's heart. And I think, if you will, I think he cries too. And so today I want to talk about reconciliation specifically from the angle of forgiveness and draw some lessons and concepts about forgiveness from Joseph's story. Most of you know the Joseph story here, but let me bring everyone up to speed just so that we're all fresh in our minds. Jacob favored his son, Joseph, over all of his other sons, so much so that the Torah says that they hated him and they would not talk to him in peace. Now, Joseph had a gift of dreams, and God gave him two dreams, clearly indicating that Joseph would one day rule over his family. Now, the dreams weren't the problem. The problem was that he told his brothers. His brothers teamed up against him and sold him for 20 pieces of silver to a slave caravan going to Egypt, and told their father that an animal had torn him to pieces, and they took his coat and dipped it in blood and gave it to him, devastating Jacob. Joseph, years later, ends up in slavery, and then he ends up in a prison, which the Torah calls the pit. But 13 years later, through interpreting Pharaoh's dreams, Joseph finds himself lifted to second in command over all of Egypt. It's quite a career, interpreting dreams. So 22 years later, after that, Joseph's brothers go to Egypt to buy food during the famine, but they don't recognize Joseph as their lost brother. But of course, Joseph does. So Joseph, in disguise, plays with his brothers a bit, but finally, after Judah, the eldest brother, who was the one responsible for selling Joseph into slavery, stands up for his younger brother, Benjamin, and Joseph just can't contain himself anymore. And he says, "Get away from me, everyone," speaking to the Egyptian, everyone in his court. And he begins to weep, it says, so loudly that Pharaoh's whole household heard about it. And through his tears, Joseph says to them in Hebrew, "I am Joseph. I am Yosef. Come near to me. I'm Joseph, your brother, the one you sold to Egypt. Come near to me. Don't be grieved and don't be angry in your own eyes that you sold me here, since it was to save lives that God sent me here before you. So now it wasn't you. You didn't send me. God sent me." Then he tells them to go and get Dad and bring everyone up and live close. And then he hugs Benjamin and he weeps on his neck. You see, this is all a story about forgiveness. And so I like to say that forgiveness is one of the healing forces that's built into the fabric of the universe that we have. But forgiveness can seem kind of abstract sometimes. You know, we might not really know how to forgive. Or when we try, we might wonder whether we've really forgiven or not. And I found that I've carried around hidden resentments for years and years that I didn't even know about after I said, "I forgive you." And those seeds of resentment get buried down, and then they weigh us down. And this is really important. In our Besorah passage today, we read Yeshua saying this remarkable statement, "If you forgive others of their transgressions, your heavenly Abba will forgive you." But here's the hard word. If you do not forgive others, neither will your heavenly Abba forgive you. In the prayer room, we see that unforgiveness works like an acid inside of a person. Unforgiveness is like the root of things like deeply ingrained anger and rage, and sometimes the root of sadness or depression or even anxiety. It leads to physical illness in people. Judith McNutt shared a story of a man who came in shuffling his feet as he walked because of bad arthritis. And the way she tells it is that they just went into this forgiveness prayer for his father who had abandoned him when he was a year old. And according to her, they didn't pray for physical healing, but the pain, the arthritis left him right at the moment of forgiveness. See, it's not always like that. Forgiveness isn't always the key, but sometimes it is. And those resentments and seeds of bitterness inside, they smother our spiritual life. They block our ability to feel God's presence and to live out of his joy, to live out of his smile. And my hope today is that we can hone in a bit and make forgiveness a little less abstract. So I've got 7 short signposts. Think of these as like signposts along the way to how to know forgiveness when you've really seen it, when you've really experienced it. And just to give credit, not exactly, but some of these concepts were inspired by the work of R.T. Kendall, who did a lot of writing on what he called total forgiveness. So I've sort of tweaked these a bit. If you know his work, they're a little different, but they are inspired by him and what he's done. Forgiveness is a journey. The first signpost on the road. Forgiveness is a journey. Sometimes I think we make forgiveness out to be like a one-time thing. You do it, and then you're done. I can't tell you how many times I've been with people who have, you know, said like, oh, I've already forgiven that person, but they're still angry. You know, there's all kinds of things going on. And maybe they really did start. But often more, forgiveness is this journey along the road rather than a quick stop. It's a long journey. Think of Joseph. The story of reconciliation took over 22 years. Joseph had a lot of time on his hands. I wonder what Joseph's processing was like in those long, horribly quiet years in the pit. Did he go through the grief cycles that psychologists talk about today? Cycling through fierce anger at his brothers for betraying him, but then moving quickly on to despair and depression because he might never see his father again, and his circumstances were hopeless and ruined. Then does he move into guilt and self-incrimination at how presumptuous he was to his brothers? Did he have panic attacks when he tried to do everything he could to get out of the situation that he was without any success? Did he at the same time have moments of quiet compassion for his brothers and accept whatever God would do with his life? Maybe they happened all at the same time, just like it does for us. But Joseph didn't jump into forgiveness with a smile in their story. Hey, guys, I forgive you. Even after all that processing time, Joseph initially puts his brothers in prison for 3 days. Well, I don't know his motivation. It doesn't say. But I imagine that over those 3 days, he was totally preoccupied reliving everything that had happened and wrestling with whether or not to take out revenge or whether or not to forgive. So it might be fair to say that we need to be able to forgive like Joseph, but maybe not all at the same moment. But I do think we need to begin the journey, and then we need to keep walking the road. So, second signpost. You know you've forgiven when you no longer talk about it to others. When you no longer talk about whatever happened to others. So, you stop telling people what they did because you no longer want to feel justified at their expense. Now, notice how Joseph never let on, according to the story, to anyone in Egypt what had happened. You can imagine who was there when he was about to reveal himself. His brother, his advisors, his guards, his translators, servants, others close to him. A lot of people, likely. And he could have easily just let everyone know, these are my brothers who betrayed me. But instead, he sends everyone away. Go away. I want to be just with my brothers. And maybe it's because he didn't want anyone to know what they had done. You know, we all want people to validate our feelings. And it's tempting to vent about what someone did to you. But when a seed of resentment begins to build, so often it isn't just a one-time venting with a confidant to help you process, but it becomes an opportunity to to punish the person who wronged you so that you justify your hurt feelings. Do you know what they did? That was so horrible. And then they even had the nerve to... Really, even if you really were wronged, it's gossip. See, before we forgive, we want everyone to know, and we find it cathartic to share how hurt we've been. But after you've truly forgiven, along the journey, you want that person to be restored. So you don't tell the world. Now, there are three exceptions to this. Always, I think. Always tell God. Because he always wants to hear your feelings and your hurts. You can vent to God. Second, if it's serious, I believe it's very important to tell one or two people you trust for therapeutic reasons or to seek counsel. You see, someone you trust, a therapist, a friend, a mentor, or a spouse. Or if there's a crime involved, someone else might get hurt. You need to bring authorities in. So I'm making that big qualifier out there too, so that we don't go in the wrong direction there. But you don't need to tell the world. Number three, you stop replaying again and again what happened in your mind. So resentment literally means, the word resentment means to feel again. So we're reliving that memory over and over and over again. It's been said that withholding forgiveness from a person is like letting them live rent-free inside of your head. Rent-free inside of your head. So you build a prison cell for both of you, and it destroys you. Before Rabbi Shlomo Carbach died, he returned to Germany to give concerts, and the people would ask him, "Why are you doing this? Don't you hate them?" And he said, "If I had two souls, I'd devote one to hating them, but I only have one, so I'm not going to waste it on hating." It's very good. Signpost four, you no longer want them to feel badly about what they did. This is a hard one. You don't want them to feel badly. When you've forgiven someone, you don't make them feel guilty. You're able to put them at ease. See, forgiveness is not, "I forgive you, but you'd better feel bad about it." Think of Joseph. He says to them, "I'm Joseph, your brother." And imagine this. They're in shock. What's he going to do? Our punishment time has come. We're dead. This is it. But Joseph reaches out a hand and he says, "Come near to me. I'm your brother. Don't be grieved. Don't be angry with yourselves. Don't blame yourselves. Please, don't feel badly about this." And then he says something remarkable. He says, "It wasn't even you who sent me here. God sent me here so that our whole family would be saved." Do you see? He changed it all around. Amazing. He totally releases them from all blame. Not only does he not want them to be punished, but he doesn't even want them to feel bad about it anymore. "It wasn't even you who did this." Now, a more ordinary application of this today in our, might be like, "Yes, I know that this thing happened, but listen, God has used it for good in my life and in the life of other people. Please don't be burdened by this anymore. Don't feel badly about it." That's forgiveness. And when you get to this point, you've truly forgiven. And I've seen resentment stored up in people for something that happened to them 15, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. We hold on to resentment for these things, thinking that we're punishing the person. But most of the time, they don't even know. And we're only punishing ourselves. No, you just release them. To qualify again, forgiveness needs hundreds of qualifications because there's so many circumstances, but timing is important for forgiveness, and I think when a wound is raw, there's a grieving process that needs to happen before jumping into forgiveness. So Yeshua teaches us how to appropriately approach someone when they've done wrong to us so that it doesn't fester. For the sake of honesty, integrity of relationships, sometimes a person does need to feel the hurt that they've experienced, see, so that there can be reconciliation. But what I'm talking about is dealing with the resentment you're left with after the appropriate grieving and processing time. I had a time in my life when I felt that I had been really wronged by someone close to me, and I was angry and I was hurt, but at that time it wasn't unforgiveness. I had to go through grieving for the loss of a friendship. You see, and it wasn't appropriate for me to just let it go at that time because I had to work through it. We had to meet and talk and try to work things through. I had to say how I felt. But then several months later, after we'd done everything we could to reconcile, I began to notice that I didn't like the person anymore. A feeling of yuck inside of me whenever something would remind me of that person, you know? Ugh. I began to notice that I would replay in my mind the things that they had done wrong. And if someone asked me about it, even though I would try to not gossip, my body language showed my dislike, damaging their reputation. And see, over time, I had allowed my initial hurt to fester and to turn into unforgiveness. And that unforgiveness was turning into bitterness. And over a few weeks, I felt God bringing this bitterness to my attention, saying, you know, Nathan, I don't like this. And I told God in the prayer time, I told him, I said, this person really wronged me. I have a right. And I felt him say, yes, Nathan, they did wrong you. Now what are you going to do about it? And I didn't know how to answer. And I felt him continue, what did I do to those who wronged me when I was on the cross? You forgave them. Yes. And I was able to release them. And I remember feeling this weight lifting off of me, and I felt as though my relationship with God was renewed and refreshed in a new way. Like there was this burden that I was carrying. So you don't talk about it. You don't replay what happened in your mind. You don't want them to feel badly about it. And along these lines, the fifth way you know that you've forgiven is when you even go out of your way to protect their reputation with other people. You let them save face and keep others from knowing what they've done. Now, of course, the exception here again is if there's a crime, you need to testify. If there's a risk of someone getting hurt, you need to speak up. If there's ongoing abuse, you need to stand against it, but not to get back at them. You see the difference? Not to get back at them. Now, Joseph could have made his brothers go back and tell their dad what he did to them. You know, instead, he's very specific. He gives them the script about what to say. He says, go tell my father, Joseph is alive. God has made him lord over all of Egypt. And he sends them away with riches and says, do not be anxious along the way. Don't worry about it. You don't need to tell him what happened. Instead of rubbing their noses in it, he gives them a way out. If someone wrongs you and you protect their reputation, you will win a lifelong friend. This is Yeshua's message we've been reading about in Matthew last week. Let the person hit you twice. Give extra to someone who steals from you. Love your enemies and those who do wrong to you. This is God's heart. Now, fairness and justice is good. We read about it in our Haftarah portion. They're good things, don't get me wrong. But in God's economy, love trumps fairness. And that's what Yeshua came to do and to bring. The next way you know when you've really forgiven is when you bless them and when you wish them well. When you can bless that person and when you can wish them well. Bless them and wish them well. So in the end, Joseph really wants to bless his brothers. He wanted them all to live happily in the land, you see? See, forgiving someone doesn't mean that what they did wasn't wrong, but it releases them from carrying around the emotional burden. It releases you from carrying around the emotional burden of what they did in your heart. So you stop being judge and juror, and you give it to God. You see? God's the one who's judge. You're not judge. You give it to God. But real forgiveness is not saying, I release this person into your hands, God, but I really hope you get them. Because then you haven't released them. Real forgiveness is when you no longer desire that person to pay the price. That's a tough order. You no longer desire that person to pay the price. See, Yeshua tells us to forgive others as he's forgiven us. That's the benchmark. We sinned. Yeshua paid the price for us so that we could have a full gift of pardon. We don't pay the price. That's forgiveness. Nothing short. And to qualify, forgiveness doesn't always mean reconciliation. If your best friend sleeps with your spouse, this is R.T. Kendall's analogy, you forgive them, but you don't vacation with them. A child molester, you forgive them, but you don't leave them with children. See? If your spouse is abusive, you forgive them, but you don't tolerate the abuse. You can forgive someone and still do the things you need to do to be safe and to keep others safe. And that might mean seeking legal justice. It might mean taking out a restraining order. But you can still forgive them in your heart between you and God. When Yeshua says, bless, pray, and do good to those who have wronged you, it means asking God to bless that person who abused you. Think about that. The parent who abandoned you. The authority figure who let you down and devastated you. The friend who offended you. The person you said you'd never forgive. To bless them. You're asking God to do good to them. You're asking God to show them mercy. And you're doing it, get this, trusting and hoping that He will hear your prayer and actually do it. That He'll actually prosper that person. That He'll actually give joy to the person that hurts you. This is a tough word, isn't it? It's really tough. But we're being asked to set them free. And ultimately, it's about our own freedom, too. And we have to understand that this whole message of forgiveness, love your enemies, total forgiveness, it's totally counterintuitive to our nature. You won't want to do this. It's not a part of us. But maybe that's the point. Yeshua came, I like to say, to break the natural cycles of anger and hate and to heal our broken world. He came to change that natural desire for revenge and turn it into love. Turn it into forgiveness. And there's a power in forgiveness that goes beyond our own hearts here. It's beyond our own. And when you forgive someone, you release their soul. And if they're sensitive enough, I believe that the other person will feel it. I have a neat story that we were praying for someone. This was a few years ago. And in the prayer room, they were able to forgive two people for separate incidents. These people were not related to each other. And they forgave these two people that they'd been holding resentment on for 10 years, 15 years, something like that. And about a week later, totally out of the blue, she receives a separate note from each person asking her for forgiveness. That's amazing. She hadn't heard from them in years. They weren't in contact with each other. Separate note from each of them. You see, these people picked up on it. Something happened when she released them. They felt released. All of a sudden, you know, there was something there, and they tied it to her, and they said, I'm going to reach out, and I'm going to apologize. And when there's resentment and bitterness between people, the people are like chained together. And when we forgive, we break those bonds. And I believe that those people felt that release, even if they weren't consciously aware of it. You see, they were sensitive enough to respond. So my last point here, the last signpost along the way, is that forgiveness is a lifelong prescription. Forgiveness is a lifelong prescription. So once you've started this journey, you commit to staying on it. And once you've totally forgiven someone, it lasts. Think of Joseph here. He totally forgave his brothers, and it stuck. You know, years later, the brothers come to Joseph right after their father dies, and they're thinking, now that our father's dead, you're going to kill us. You were just doing this for his sake. And they ask him again for forgiveness. And it says that Joseph weeps again. He says, don't you know? Don't be afraid. Yeah, you did evil against me, but God used it for good. I've already forgiven you. Years later, he's still forgiven them. When Yeshua's disciples asked Yeshua how many times we should forgive, up to 7 times? He says, of course, you know, no, up to 77 times. And he didn't add any qualifications. It's like a pill that you take, that you have to take every day for the rest of your life. The doctor gives you or something like that. That's forgiveness. It's something you keep taking. You keep forgiving again and again and again and again and again for the rest of your life. And when you keep doing it, God sees, and it's genuine. So you know when you've forgiven, when you understand that forgiveness is a journey, and you need to make a choice to step on the road, when you no longer talk about it to others, when you stop replaying again and again what happened in your mind, when you no longer want them to feel badly about what they did, when you protect their reputation with other people, when you bless them and wish them well, and when you agree that your forgiveness is a lifelong prescription. Now, I want to take a moment. I don't usually do this, but this kind of thing at sermon time. But with forgiveness, if something comes up, it's good to be able to like do it right away, just to start. And so I just want to ask you to just take a moment and just close your eyes here. So no one's looking. I'm not looking. And how many of you have someone in your life that you need to extend forgiveness to? Just, if you do, just raise your hand just a little, just so you acknowledge, you know, like, yes, I do. I do have someone that I need to forgive. Maybe it's a parent. Maybe it's a friend, someone who's hurt you, someone who's abused you. Perhaps it's yourself. These steps really apply to yourself, too. Perhaps it's releasing God. And I just want to give us a short opportunity again to begin the process, to step on the journey. So if you feel like you're ready to begin that process, again, you don't have to be ready to forgive every single thing, but just to start the process, to go a bit further on the road, pray with me. You can just pray under your breath. Abba, thank you that you have totally forgiven me through Yeshua. I'm sorry for my bitterness towards this person. Please help me to see this person with your eyes and with your forgiveness. I know that forgiveness is a journey, but I choose to forgive this person for what they did. I forgive them. You forgive them. I will do my best to no longer talk about the things that they did needlessly. I will try not to feel more resentment by replaying in my mind the wrongs that they did again and again. I won't let them feel badly about what they did. I won't shame them anymore. I won't make them feel guilty. I will protect their reputation with other people. I bless them. I pray for you to bring about good in their lives. I pray that they would find peace and joy. I release them. As best I know how, I continue to release them for the rest of my life. I set them free. I release them. I forgive them. Thank you, Abba, for the gift of forgiveness. And now I give you my life. I give you my heart. L'shem Yeshua. Amen. Shabbat shalom, everybody.